This is the Bigger Pockets Podcast, show 393, kicking it old school.
You can't just say, well, I lost my job. I can't do this. I ain't going to rent no more. Where you going to live? What you going to do? Now, you may have families move in together, but they've got to live somewhere. Some, they're going to be paying rent to somebody or owning their own house. And another thing I always like to tell people when you're looking at property, always remember, liars can number, but numbers don't lie.
You're listening to Bigger Pockets Radio, simplifying real estate for investors large and small. If you're here looking to learn about real estate investing without all the hype, you're in the right place. Stay tuned and be sure to join the millions of others who have benefited from BiggerPockets.com, your home for real estate investing online.
What's going on, everyone? It's Brandon Turner, host of the Bigger Pockets Podcast, here with my co-host, Mr. David Green. David, good to see you again.
Good to see you too. This was an absolute blast. This is going to go down as I think one of the most fun podcasts we've done in a while.
It was. We just got finished recording with a Mr. Rick. Is it Rick Jarman? Rick is old school when it comes to real estate. I don't mean that in a bad way. That's actually his Instagram handle, Real Estate Old School. But he is he's been in this game longer than I've been alive, significantly longer than I've been alive. And he's just a character. He just knows so much. He's had so many experiences, so much knowledge. Wisdom and just funny stories. You guys are going to love this show with Rick from down in Alabama. So we're going to get to that in just a minute. But before we get to Rick and being a rental property owner and all the fun things that go with that, let's get to today's quick tip. You know what, David? I'm going to let you take today's quick tip.
I didn't prepare one. You would do that right now. Okay. I got a good quick tip for our listeners today. Today's quick tip is when you listen to Rick's story, he's going to share how he built over 100 units and over $8 million in net worth doing the same boring thing over and over and over. And Rick shared that he did not worry about the fears more than what they were warranted. He would actually go out there and look at, is this worst case scenario something likely to happen? Or all my houses are going to go vacant at the same time. And there's a lot of value to get out of one, not overthinking things. When you're afraid, it's okay to be afraid, but ask, is it warranted? Is it based on actual reasonable things that could happen? And two, don't get bored doing the same thing all the time. Success comes from the same repeated, sometimes boring efforts. That's how you get good at something. So don't be afraid to be boring.
Yeah, that's so good. Hey, you know, one point that we never made during the show, but I'll make it now, and this will make more sense later when you're listening. But we talk about how like a lot of real estate success is just doing the right things over and over and over until you're good at it. If you are somebody who gets prone to getting bored, which I know I am, and David, you are as well, what we found is what works really well is find somebody else. Once you master it, find somebody else to do that job for you. Because then the same boring tactics over and over and over, not boring because you don't have to do them anymore. Get somebody else to do them. And then you just make sure that they're doing them over and over and over. And that's what a job really is, right? If you really think about it, all jobs are doing the same boring thing over and over and over because somebody else didn't want to do that anymore. Now that's what you're doing. So it's time to step up and be the leader eventually and do that. So anyway, there you go. I just put that together.
That's
right,
really
there.
Really good. I like that. That's a good quote. All jobs are what somebody else didn't want to do and now you're doing it.
Yes.
What's better than low money down? No money down. Now through Rent-to-Retirement, you can buy a brand new construction turnkey rental property for no money down. Wait, hold on. This can't be right. I need to double check with Zach, Rent-to-Retirement CEO.
Oh, hey, Rob.
Zach, how the heck are you selling turnkey rental properties for $0 down?
It's not that complicated, Rob. Rent-to-Retirement has new construction properties up to $20,000 below retail prices. We also have investor loans with rates as low as 3.99% and down payment options as low as 5% or sometimes even zero money down. You get all the cash flow, appreciation, and equity for as little as zero money down. That's an infinite return.
Oh, wait, let me get on this before we tell it to the whole Bigger Pockets audience.
Just head to renttoretirement.com. That's renttoretirement.com or text REI to 33777. That's REI to 33777 to learn more about how you can get started investing with no money down today.
Get your next new construction property at a steep discount or invest with no money down. Head to renttoretirement.com today. Passive income without the property headache? It's possible. There's a way to invest passively in real estate and get monthly income without any tenants, maintenance, or property management. The Wealthy have been doing this for years, and if you're an accredited or high net worth investor, you too can collect cash flow without the headaches that come from owning rentals. How? By investing in a private real estate fund with PPR Capital Management. PPR's co-founder, Dave Van Horn, wrote the book on real estate note investing for BP. But he's not just investing in notes. Dave and his team also have an extensive background in commercial real estate. And with PPR Capital Management, they're strategically investing in both notes and commercial real estate nationwide. With over $500 million in assets under management, PPR has provided individuals with a steady source of truly passive income since 2007 without ever missing a payment. Check them out at investwithppr.com. Again, if you're looking to get monthly passive income from an experienced team with a strong track record, go to investwithppr.com today. Real estate investing is great, but for some, the tenant phone calls and clogged toilets aren't all that attractive. So how do you invest in real estate without getting your hands dirty? Invest for truly passive income with Pine Financial Group. Pine's mortgage fund offers a targeted 8% preferred return and an attractive profit split with 70% of net profits going to the investors. You'll earn passive income by participating in lending to house flippers. And it's secure because senior lien holders, that's you, are first in line to get paid. Their rigorous underwriting process and the backing of a physical asset mitigate downside risk. Plus, by investing with Pine Financial Group, you contribute to the revitalization of communities by directing your funds from Wall Street to Main Street and supporting local economies. The investment is reserved for accredited investors. Take control of your investments and secure more passive income today. Visit pinefinancialgroup.com/biggerpockets to learn more about the fund. That's pinefinancialgroup.com/biggerpockets.
I think it's time to jump into this thing. David, you ready? Anything you want to add before we go in? Okay.
Not at all. This is a great show. Let's bring Rick in.
All right, here we go. All right, Rick, welcome to the show. Good to have you here. It's been a long time coming.
And I'm glad to be here. I've really been looking forward to it. I sure have.
Well, awesome. Because, you know, one of the reasons I was excited to get you on is because on Instagram, like you're you know, pretty active on Instagram for a, you're a 41-year-old guy, I think is what you said. And so you have a fantastic Instagram with tons of good advice. It's Real Estate Old School is your handle there. Very entertaining, very just good, solid advice on rental properties and what it really takes to be a successful owner. So that's what we're going to dive in today. What does it actually take to be a successful real estate investor with rental properties? So before you had 100+, you know, houses and all that crazy world we're going to get to, how'd you get into real estate? Like, how did this thing start?
Well, quick story on it. Right when I came out of high school, I was working in a cabinet shop. The summer before I graduated high school, I knew I worked doing construction, building houses, and I found what I love, what I wanted to do. And basically, that's all I've done my entire life is into construction and, you know, maintenance and flipping and, you know, remodeling, just everything. But when I was putting my wife through college, I was keeping up rental property for other people. I worked for 10 years in maintenance at the University of Alabama from 1974 to 84 and was doing my thing on the side, you know. And so I got to noticing, you know, working on these people's apartments and houses that there's something to this. So it kind of piqued my interest. And so I read an article, I'm going to date myself, in Reader's Digest. It was called Beating Inflation with Real Estate. And this is late 1980, early, well, 81. And my mother had asked me, she said, what would you like for Christmas? Well, I had, you know, I was married, two kids, and you know how it is, and working my job and side jobs. I said, well, there's three books that were listed in this article I read, and I would love to get those three books. And that's what I did. And that was the first books I ever read on real estate. And I actually keep them in my bedroom between a couple bookends where I can look at them every day.
That's awesome. What were the books?
One of them's name was, it was by William Nickerson. He's probably the granddaddy of all the real estate folks. I even got to meet him one time.
Oh, nice.
It was how I turned $1,000 or $5,000 into $1 million.
Yep.
And later on, they renamed it to $5 million. And one of them was Albert J. Lowry, How to Become Financially Independent, you know, through real estate. And the other one was Robert G. Allen, Nothing Down. And they all came out classics around 1980, the issues I bought.
Nice. Yeah, classics. Yeah, that is old school real estate books. That's that's awesome.
And later on, I got into Mark Harrison, you know. I don't know if you've ever heard of him. I even actually, the only seminar I ever went to in my life was in the early 90s in Orlando, Florida. He put on, but he was real big for a while. He'd have people like Brian Tracy and all these guys come, you know. They were all young then.
Yeah. Yeah. Brian Tracy's not young anymore.
No. Neither.
Yeah. So what happened next? Where'd you go? You decided, okay, I got these three books, I'm going to take some action. What'd you do?
Yeah, well, I ended up buying my first rental house in 1981. I was working with a guy that was going through a divorce, and he had a house that he was going to sell to me for $10,000. It was worth about $20,000 at the time, a two-bedroom, one bath. And I didn't have any money, you know. I'm just, you know, like I said, just paying for my wife's schooling and, you know, life things. So I went to my credit union and I told them about the house, and they told me if I could get the money for the repairs and pay for the closing costs, they'd finance it for me. So at that time, just like I said, this was 81. I had a 1979 Ford Ranger XLT truck that was nice. I'm talking about a good-looking truck. Well, I sold my truck, got my equity out of it. I went and found an old 1969 Plymouth station wagon that the tailgate would fold down like a truck. I knew I could work out of it, and got it for $600. It had a loan value of $1,200, so I borrowed an extra $600 and got the money to fix the house up, and that was my first rental.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Here's what I love about that. I mean, it just shows, like, if you really, like, it's that old quote, if you really want to do something, you'll find a way. If not, you'll find an excuse.
Right.
I think Jim Rohn says that, David Green, not me. And if you really want to, you'll find it. Like, you figured out a way. And the same thing applies today. I mean, maybe, like, is there a car you have to sell, or is there some other way you got to sacrifice overtime? You got to work to be able to get that first deal. But you can't get wealthy if you don't get the first deal, like the real estate.
How bad you want it.
How bad you want it. All right. So what came next?
Well, bought my second house. I got 100% owner financing. And I kind of got broke in early in this game. My second house, I had a fire and they wanted to total it. I found out, you know, back then you didn't have all the things you have now, checking credit and all that. You know, they fill out application, they look good, and they got the first month's rent and deposit. So, and I was so green. I was green as a cucumber, man. I didn't even know to check the past references or whatever. So I rented this lady, and at the time, my wife had some surgery, and I'd been working and seeing her at the hospital and got home, got in bed, and I get a call from the neighbor next door, and because it's four cell phones, of course, and she's telling me, "Mister, if you won't see your house before it burns down, you better get down here fast." I mean, I'm trying to get awake, you know, and I said, "Do what? Do what?" Of course, I had two houses, so I wasn't sure which one, you know. Uh-huh. It's 50-50 of which one it could have been. And she told me, and come to find out, this guy's kind of get drunk and he'd like to beat on his wife a little bit. And she tried to burn him up. You know, that's what I heard. I didn't share that with anybody at the time. You know, I just went on and they wanted to total it. And I said, well, I think I can fix it. So I had a friend of mine had contractor license and he put a bid in for me. And I did all the work and got it going. You know, I was come from that working background.
Wow. Okay, so you got started with a little bit of a hot beginning.
Well, it actually started out worse than that. Right before I got out of high school, I was engaged to be married. My wife and I have been married 47 years. And so I just turned 18, but I'd paid down on a trailer, bought a piece of land, owner financing, $500 down, and he financed it. And so I'd put a septic tank in and a water meter. I'd been working all my life, you know. So anyway, we're having graduation practice, you know. That's, you know, I guess they still do that, you know, we practice. So they were supposed to deliver my trailer. So, you know, we're waiting and waiting and hadn't got there yet. So me and a buddy of mine rode out to the main highway to see where it was, if we could see it. And we saw it all right. It was scattered all up and down the highway. An 18-wheeler had hit it when it was turning and just totaled it, you know, and I'm thinking, man, have I still got to pay for this thing? Cause I'm just 18, you know? And
yeah.
And so they said, oh, don't worry, we'll have you another one in 2 weeks. It was like 2 months. So we had to spend the first couple of months of marriage living with my parents. So my real estate career started off rough.
Man.
I'm curious, when you were getting started, a lot of people today assume this is a scary time to get into real estate. But my assumption would be everyone's always thought this is a scary time to get into real estate. And we don't get to talk to people very often and have as many units as you do and have done it as long and have seen the highs and the lows. Can you tell me what your mindset was like back then when you were getting started as far as your fears, concerns, emotions?
Well, you know, I came up real poor. I'll give you a little history. My dad was a World War II veteran. He had a complete mental breakdown when I was 3 years old. And for about 9 months to a year, we were homeless. My brother went and lived with one family. My mother and I lived with another family or her sister. And so we grew up working, had to work, you know. So everything was one of those deals where it couldn't, you know, everything just looked up. You know, I always had the attitude, you know, my mother raised us, we're good as anybody else. Everybody puts their pants on one leg at a time and just to work hard. And so I grew up working. So the opportunity to me was always to better myself. Mm-hmm. I like to tell people, you know, that fear, you can take that fear and you can let it cripple you or you can turn it into a motivator. And for me, my fear was I didn't want to be poor. You know, my parents were poor. My grandparents were. I wasn't going to be poor.
So what about the fear of losing money?
Well, I didn't have that. I guess because, you know, when I was working at the university before I left, I'd worked there 10 years when I left. I went in business for myself. I just turned 29, built my first house. And when I acquired about four or five houses, some of the guys said, what you going to do if they all get into it one time? I mean, it just wasn't going to happen. I mean,
so,
you know.
So people were asking that question back then,
too. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you know, right. What are you going to do? And I'm thinking, yeah. Well.
How often did you get asked about toilets?
Yeah.
Was that around for a long time also?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Brandon and I joke about that because everybody wants to know about, like, clogged toilets, but that's not really the problem landlords get the most often. Right.
I was doing a live Wednesday night with a friend of mine that lives in California that I've met on here, and we got to where we do a live every Wednesday night. And right there in the middle of it, I forgot to cut my phone off, and the phone rings. And the way we work it, I'm on call one week. My son's on call, then my office manager. Mm. We had a main sewer line stopped up, and I said, y'all hold on, man. I got to handle this, you know, because they would need some direction from me. Because we do self-manage. We manage our stuff also.
Yeah.
So tell me, what's your portfolio at now?
We're at about 118 houses right now. In 2011, Tuscaloosa, where I live, Tuscaloosa, Alabama, had a bad tornado, and I lost 26 houses totaled and a commercial building.
Wow.
So it took a little while to regroup, you know.
26 houses in a tornado? Like, that's
total.
Wow. So
I had damaged probably 70 more, you know, so.
What? So insurance takes care of that, or did you lose a lot of money? Did it? Okay.
Luckily, you know, but it doesn't happen overnight, you know. Yeah. It was a total close to 3 years getting squared away completely with them.
Yeah. Yeah,
but
wow.
So, if you think things aren't going to happen in this business, you're wrong.
Yeah.
It's so funny that you say that. I was reminded of a Tony Robbins quote, and I'm going to give Tony credit for it because only one of us on the show can steal quotes and get away with it. I've got like quite a few houses in escrow right now on the real estate team, which means every day somebody's unhappy with something. When you do enough volume, you're going to end up having problems. And Tony Robbins was saying he had to come to grips with the fact that with as many businesses as he has, several hundred employees all around the world, somebody somewhere is unhappy. There's some fire that has to be put out. And when you're living a small life, you can really avoid unhappy people or things going wrong. When you want to live a big life or you set big goals, part of that is just accepting. If I have 100 houses, 5 to 10 of them at any given time are going to have something going wrong, maybe more. And you can't let that negative emotion stop you from pushing forward or discourage you from building up to be bigger or whatever you're doing. Was there a point, Rick, where you had a similar experience that you just had to say, hey, stuff goes wrong, you got to work with it?
Well, you know, I guess as you're growing, you kind of, it was an everyday thing for me, this work. For years, I did my own maintenance when I was, you know, younger. But you're growing and your houses and the numbers are growing. And when you reach a point, like I have a full-time maintenance man. My son's worked in the business with me for 20 years now. You know, my maintenance man's been with me about 14 years. I have a sales lady that's been with me for 16, office manager for 10. So it's just, you know, it just gets to be day-to-day life for you. And that was one thing when I first got on Instagram, it kind of helped me. It made me go back and rethink why I did certain things, or because you just, it gets to be your job and it's what you do. And of course, I love it today as much as the day I started. People, they'll ask things, you know, and you think first, that's kind of silly in a way, but then you realize they have nothing to compare it to. And so, for me, learning all this YouTube stuff and Instagram, go on YouTube and learn that, I can see that as people when they're learning the real estate, you know, where I remember the first thumbnail I made, I stayed up to 1 o'clock in the morning doing it. And I was so proud of myself. And I told them, I said, now y'all may think that's funny in one of my videos. I said, but I can build you a house from scratch. You know, I can sell it. I'm a real estate broker. And I can do all these things, but I didn't know how to make a thumbnail, you know? So
there's such a lesson in that when you do something new, how long it takes you to learn a new thing. And it kind of speaks to Brandon's point he makes frequently, where you don't want to try to build 20 bridges at one time from one place to another. Because when you're first learning how to make a bridge is where you spend all your time. Once you know how to do it, man, you can fly through things. And there's a quote that Gary Keller said, I believe, where he said people, something along the lines of, because I don't want to get this wrong and have Brandon jump on me because I made up a quote for someone. People get bored with doing what works. So they try to make what doesn't work work. And there's something to be said where if you want to get to the point where you're at, Rick, you're kind of doing the same thing over and over and over, getting really good at doing that thing. And I think you're a great example for our listeners of, I'd really love to know, how did you avoid the bright, shiny object syndrome where you thought, oh, you know what? I'm going to go buy a hotel. I'm going to go buy a mobile home park. I'm going to go get into apartment investing. And instead you said, nope, I'm going to stick with single family houses and repeat this process.
Well, you know, I did try apartments over the years and different things. You know, I'm in a university town. So me working in university and maintenance and housing, what better training? You know, I worked in housing maintenance. I didn't like the students. I mean, they could tear an envelope. It just wasn't my thing. So a few years ago, I sold all the student rentals I had, but I just found I've loved houses. I always like houses, and I just found what I loved. And I just, you know, it's tempting sometimes, but just like those three books I told you I read, two of those guys went busted. They got away from what they knew. You know, Albert J. Lowry got into the spas and stuff, and Robert Allen, I don't know what he got into. And, you know, we all, sometimes you in this business loan, if you'll go through your financial hard times, I did myself. But it's just, you know, you find what works. And when I had the student rentals, it was so much different than the time. I do a lot of Section 8. We're geared for it. We know it. In fact, Josiah Smessler called me the other day, asked me some questions, and I know he's was a big reason me to get on here, and I appreciate him and y'all. And, you know, we specialize in that, and that's what we do.
Yes, this lesson is so important. I'm glad you brought it up originally, David, like that quote from Gary Keller, because that's what people do. Like they get bored of what works. Like I said, I did this webinar the other day, and I talked about how like real estate at its core is pretty boring. Like you just kind of do the same thing, and there's like 12 steps. You just kind of do it, and like the first time, obviously it's hard, and the second time you're learning things, and it's like trying to make a thumbnail, right? Like for YouTube. Yep. But pretty soon, like you just, as long as you're consistent with it, you're going to become a multimillionaire over time. And people screw up because they just jump from to different things. It's like imagine if like. I'm going to use an analogy here because I'm now the analogist of the group, David. If Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan, I don't know, did they play together? I think they did. If they played together, like back in the day, we're going old school here, and they were like shooting free throws, right? And they're like, you know, I don't really like shooting free throws. I'm going to back up 10 more feet and try that shot because that's more fun. I'm going to try just like this shot, but I'm going to do trick shots like over my head all day long. That's more fun. Like they don't. They just do like thousands and thousands of the same shot and the same play, and they run it 50 times over and over, you know, a day to make sure that they're masters at that play.
And Scottie Pippen knew, I need to let Michael Jordan be Michael Jordan. When you start competing with the person, when you want to do what they're doing, that whole dynasty wouldn't have been there. He had to be okay with doing what we would call the boring work, which made somebody else better. And I mean, I think that's a really big factor of success that isn't talked about. When we talk to successful people, if we ask them, what did you not do that made you successful? I bet you they have a list of stuff. Yeah. Like, I didn't make this mistake. I didn't go do that. I stayed with what I knew.
Well, yeah. And you know, during the time too, I was building homes. You know, I was a home builder, and I quit building homes in 2015. Of course, we didn't build probably about 10 houses since the recession. We were able to pull back and ride it out good because I'd learned all my lessons in the late 90s. So I was a home builder, and we remodeled, and, you know, for the recession, I had a 16-man crew. I like to tell folks, it's kind of like it is now. The tail wags the dog. You can't get anybody to, you know, you wait in line to get work done or whatever. So I'm a very impatient person, so I had my own crews. We had two framing crews, vinyl siding crew, trim crew, painting crew. So we did all that. So, you know, the rental was just kind of continuously growing. As I tell folks, I lived life and did my job. And that's what, you know, I hear all the time, I hate to say young people or new people, because my baby will be 39 next month. So that's, but the first thing they'll ask sometimes is, well, how many houses did you have to have before you could quit work? Well, that wasn't the goal. I love work. In fact, David, I talk about you in one of my videos. I sent it to you, but, you know, I'm going to tell the story in a minute. but on David, I love to work. I hope the day I die that I made a deal happen. If not, I at least collected some rent. You know, I love this business.
Yeah, and it keeps you young. It keeps you moving. It keeps you like excited and like so many people get older and then they just like they're like, well, retirement. I'm gonna go play some golf every day.
Well, when I turned 60, I had a friend of mine. I asked him, he was at like 80 at the time. I said, why do you keep doing it? He says, well, and I knew the answer because I knew what I'd told myself. He says, well, I enjoy buying them. I love fixing them up. And he says, and I like the money. Now, you know, that's it. You know, that's, you know, I tell people, your mind doesn't change when you, you know, you hear people say, man, I'm going to work and do hard when I hit 40. I'm quitting, you know. You know, you're not going to work that hard and build what you got and just be willing to walk away from it if you're a true entrepreneur.
I want to ask you, Rick, how the heck are you getting financing on 100 houses? Because we get a lot of questions from people that haven't even bought a house yet and they're worried about what they're going to do when they get 10.
Yeah.
So let's just get that out of the way so they can go get their first house and not worry about it.
Okay. Well, it starts out, you know, I like local banks. And when I first started, I used credit unions, you know, credit unions to do up to 4 or 5. But I have several local banks I deal. I have one loan that started out with 56 houses on it. I'll give you the numbers. I paid $500,000 down on it. They financed $1,550,000. It's paid down now to less than $700,000. And just a lot of those houses are worth $150,000 to $170,000. And my portfolio of real estate's over $10 million. I probably owe less than $2 million. And like I said, it was just kind of my side gig, you know, as I'm working and doing my stuff. So I was trying to tell my wife the other day, I said, now you realize in about 5 years, you're going to get a $12,000 a month raise and it's just going over her head, you know. But what I decided I'd do is, like I said, there's right now on that particular loan, there's 46 houses in that one loan. It's with one local bank. I'm going to refinance that's less than $700,000 started over. I always do 15-year loans. Started over at 15 years and the payment will go from $12,000 a month down to about $5,000. So I get a $7,000 a month plus raise, and that's just how. But yeah, it's just different banks. You go to them, and as you be, you know, it's the numbers. You pay your bills on time, and keep your property up, and you just keep those inroads with the banks. I don't know if that answered your question or not, but
no, I think you definitely did. I mean,
I hear people say all the time, you can only have 10 houses with one. Yep. No, that's not so. I mean,
that's not
this
true.
Loan I got started out is 56 houses.
Hey, why 15-year mortgages?
You know, when I started out, that was how you did it. And the banks, you know, that's about all they'd amortize them over for commercial loans, you know, the banks. And your credit unions, if it was an in-house loan, which that's what that would have been, was a 15-year loan. So I just started out doing them that way and just kind of stuck with it. And I've got a video where I show the difference in the payments on the 15 and the 30-year. And if you're getting a deal up front and you're not counting on all that money, well, you think about it. I mean, like, how old are you, Brandon?
Just turned 35 yesterday.
You're just a baby.
Okay.
Well, so if you did a loan today, you'd be 65 when it's paid for.
Yeah.
But you do it on 15 years. Look how many more years you're enjoying the money. And, you know, it may make $100, $200 a month difference. But look at all the interest you save also.
Yeah. Hey, David, what do you think on that? I mean, like, you're as an agent and also a lender, 15 versus 30, what do you typically do? And where would somebody maybe want to do 30 over 15 or 15 over 30? What do you think?
God, this is such a good question because they both have their merits. I'm looking at getting another house for myself. I'm going to house hack. And I'm going over the same question. Do I want the better rate at 15 years, which you do save a lot in interest over the life of the loan, 100%. But when interest rates are this low, that isn't quite as impactful as when they're much higher. I'm sure Rick could tell us stories of what he's seen interest rates over the years. Sub 3% is not very common. I don't know if we've ever had them low like this. So then there's a part of me that says, well, if I get a chance to get 30 years at 2.8 or 2.9%, then that's what I'm going to do. And we got a lot of our clients that we're doing, we can get them there. So one of the things I think about is what's your strategy? So there's, Brandon, you and I have talked about this. There's a strategy where you buy a house, you put it on a 15-year note. Then next year, you buy another house, you put it on a 15-year note, and you do that every year. And 15 years later, your first house is paid off. You refinance it tax-free because you don't have to pay any taxes on a refi. You live off of that money for the year. And then next year, your second house ends up paying itself off. And then you live on that money and you just keep doing that. And by the time the last house has been paid down and refied, you're back to the first refi that you did. You never work again, right? You just live off of that. So I really like that strategy when it comes to the 15-year notes. But if it was just as pure as, do I want to go 15 or 30? I like the 30 right now because rates are really low. I like the 15 more when rates are higher.
Yeah, you know, the way that I look at it is, if your ultimate goal is to get out of your job as fast as possible and get financial like independence, like level one, like I can pay my bills, a 15-year mortgage costs more, right? Like you said, Rick, a couple $100 a month more, maybe. Okay, so maybe if you're all, like if you just need money right now and you got to get out of your job, I'd probably go for a 30. Like when I got started, I was going for a 30. So, like for that same reason, you wouldn't want to buy a house for cash. You wouldn't want to you use as much debt as possible. Like all those reasons make sense if your goal is to just be aggressive and get out of your job. Later on, though, your goals might change. Paying off a bunch of houses sounds like a really awesome thing to me because my goals change. I want more security. So 15-year mortgages now sound a whole lot better. And so I can withstand the weight a little bit. You agree with that, Rick?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and like David said, usually the rates aren't like this. And so you're getting a better rate. Yeah. For a 15-year mortgage, and if you found a deal, it all works out. But yeah, like you were talking about, David, I can remember because, like I said, I'm a real estate broker also, and of course, I mainly just would sell my stuff over the years, but I had agents, whatever, sell my stuff. I can remember, though, back in the 90s, that 11 3/4 fix was the best we could get people, and it was a bond issue, and they camped out all night long to get this federal bond issue.
Isn't that something?
But 12% adjustable was the best they could get at that time. And these people camped out to get 11 3/4 fixed bond money. And people are still selling houses, buying houses, and making a living.
Yep.
It's really important to remember that we oftentimes fall victim to recency bias, where we're looking at everything around us and seeing this is how things are. This is how they're supposed to be. But it wasn't always that way. And what I really like about your story is I'm sure along this entire journey, there was never a really good time to buy. There was always something that could have come up that said, you know what, now is not the time, I should wait. That voice never goes away. But I would say in my lifetime, the best that I ever saw was 2009, 2010. Looking back, we would all say, you should have bought everything you could get. But Rick, you remember that. It wasn't a lot of people saying, go buy real estate right now. It was batten the hatches, duck and cover. Who knows what's coming? The apocalypse is on the way. Don't buy anything. So there's always a reason that you're going to have to not buy real estate. But like you said in the beginning, that comment you made about inflation, that's so powerful. That's why you want to build wealth the boring way, just doing boring stuff with real estate, because inflation takes you so far, both in increased rents and increased values.
That's right. In fact, like I always keep referring to my videos, but I've got one on about anything you want to talk about. I've got one just about recessions where since I've been out of high school, I've been through 6 recessions counting this one. Now, the first one was a gas embargo. When I come out of high school, you know, it lasted about a year and a half, the recession. You'd be getting gas lines, hope you had gas, go to work. And then the next one, by the next 5, I was in business, not for myself full time. Probably 4 of them since I've been in business for myself full time. And there's always them, but nothing was like 2008. Now, if you were a home builder, real estate agent, it was tough. I mean, my agent's been with me, like I said, 16 years. She had to go to work part-time as a dental assistant. I mean, it was tough. I was fortunate enough to have my rentals to live on because, like I said, up to the recession, my whole career, I built approximately 500 houses. But since the recession, I probably only built 10. Of course, we were dealing with the tornado right after the recession ended, you know, in 2011. But a lot of people that were in the business had to sell off their stuff. Like I said, I learned these hard lessons in the late 90s. So I was able to pull back, do what I needed to do, just live off my rentals. We actually opened up an interior and antique shop so my son and his wife would have something to do because he worked with me because we wasn't building. Because my rentals could take care of me, but that time they couldn't take care of everybody. But so I tell people now, you know, since the Great Recession, and this sounds terrible, but a blind person could do this business. I mean, it's just been going up, up, and up. But what happened? You had people to come in that were able to buy stuff in 2010, 11, that the people lost during 2008 and 9. So, you know, they weren't geniuses. They just able to get good deals. See, the people that were losing it couldn't borrow money. Mm-hmm. You know, they were fighting battles and the banks quit loaning. Now, me, I had some private money lenders, and I was able to increase my net worth by $2 million right after the recession because I bought stuff I knew I wouldn't keep that didn't fit my criteria.
Yeah.
But I knew I could sell it when things picked up, you know, it all worked out. But it was tough. I mean, you know, here in my town, they were probably just a handful of us that didn't go out of business that was builders. In fact, 2009, I was president of our local home builders association. Worst time you could be president. Yeah. I mean, when we were having our awards banquet, I told them, look around the room. We have about 300 something builders and associates at that time, all 400. There wasn't a banker one in there except one, and he was the secretary, you know, of the association or the bookkeeper, whatever they call it. I said, the bankers, well, they were scared to come. It was terrible.
Yeah.
People don't know how bad it was. So what we're going through now is so different. It's bad, the health stuff, but the banking-wise, there's so many things that are, the banks are being, you know, the government's helping. You didn't have none of that in 2008. It was just, they just shut the doors and banks were in damage control.
So what do you say to people right now who are listening to this show going, you know, the recession might be coming again. I'm freaked out. The economy's in limbo right now. I don't know what's going to happen. I just want to sit out. Should I sit out? What do you say to those people right now that are just worried about the economy?
I have a philosophy I tell people. I said, people are going to either rent or buy or live under the bridge. Only so many can live under that bridge. So just because the market gets bad and people can't sell or buy, you know, they got to live somewhere. Real estate never goes out of style. That demand for housing has always been there. It's always going to be. You can't just say, well, I lost my job. I can't do this. I ain't going to rent no more.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you going to live? What you going to do? Now, you may have families move in together, but they've got to live somewhere. They're going to be paying rent to somebody or owning their own house. And another thing I always like to tell people when you're looking at property, always remember, liars can number, but numbers don't lie. Them two things right there get you.
You
just got to keep going. I mean, you can't, there's opportunity in every situation, just like there's going to be opportunities after this one.
What do you think about advice for helping people find the right tenants?
You know, I'm old school, of course, so, you know, I don't pay any attention to the Beacon score or the FICO score like I hear people talk about. I'm hooked up with one of the credit bureaus. We do the credit checks right there in our office. But you can still get what I call old school credit report. All you do, it shows basically the same thing, but it doesn't even talk about their score like their Beacon score. You can look and you can see, you know, okay, are they paying the water bill, the power bill, the gas bill? I don't care if my tenants have medical bills. A lot of people don't have insurance, you know. If they have student loans, they're not paying. That doesn't bother me. I check the past two landlords. You know, you always won't check two of them because the one they're at now maybe wanting to get rid of them. Yep. Tell you, they're a good tenant.
Yep.
So if they do that and they pay the utilities, and sometimes I don't even care if they own the cell phones because sometimes I hate paying mine. You know what I mean? So if they're doing those things, more likely they're going to pay you. You know, that's, and, you know, I hear people got, I don't take anybody with a Beacon score or, I mean, whatever, FICO score under 700, whatever. I'm thinking you're cutting your own throat. You know, there's good people out there that don't have high scores but pay the bills.
Yeah.
How about you, Brandon? What have you noticed as far as just advice you can give to people that are looking to scale and they want to make sure when they're self-managing?
Like how to find tenants, you mean, or just
how
in general?
How to avoid the wrong tenant.
I think... So here's what I do, and I'm curious, Rick, of like, do you agree with this? I mean, basically, I look at real estate like a funnel, right? So everything's a funnel in my life. No, but like, basically, if I'm having trouble finding a good tenant, whether I'm just not getting any apply, I look at the prop. Did I either not do a good enough job advertising? Did I not get it out there, right? If people don't know about your listing, they're not going to call, right? And then if I'm still having problems, that means, is my unit up to snuff? Is it better than the average, or is it about like the average? So I look at that. I look at, you know, am I charging the right rent? Am I at or below or at least somewhere around like where it should be? And if not, I'm going to fix one of those things. I have never, ever, ever, ever had a problem finding a tenant ever in my entire career. I never had a problem. I've never had a vacancy more than a month or two. Now, I've only been doing this for 14 years versus, you know, Rick, you've been doing this a lot longer. But I don't have problems with that because people always need to rent. Doesn't matter the market. They always need to rent. So I just need to make sure that I'm better than other people in quality or in price or in advertising, marketing, one of those three things. And then Additionally, I am really big on defining my criteria ahead of time. What makes a good tenant? What doesn't make a good tenant? So like, I don't want somebody who's murdered somebody. I want somebody who has a job. I want that job to be at least for 6 months. I have like these criteria, right? And then I do the same thing Rick does. We check the last two landlords. We want to make sure they've paid their rent on time, that the land, like, they don't have any horror stories. And then I put my criteria out there. I get a lot of marketing, and I've never had an issue getting tenants.
I tell you something else we do, because we do manage our stuff, and everything I have is right here in Tuscaloosa, Northport. So I tell people, I like to use contractors that do the work they sell. But you know, when you're interviewing a contractor, just kind of look over at his truck and toot. If he takes pride in all those things, he's going to take pride in his work. He comes driving up no raggedy truck, gets out with a, first of all, be sure they have license, insurance, and workman's comp. If he doesn't have all those things, or she, and they give you a bid, it may be cheaper, but what makes you think you're going to get them back? Because that's something I hear all the time. People say, my contractor screwed me. Now you screwed yourself. Mm-hmm. I've been a contractor since the 70s. You know, it's hard to compete with the truth against a lie, because a lot of them will lie. But yep. You've got to pick them and check them out. And I got off the subject there. I apologize.
No, I think that's a great point, though.
The contractor didn't screw you over. Every time I've been screwed over by a contractor, every single solitary time, it was my fault. Like, it's always my fault with the contractor.
I know it.
It's something I did wrong. I didn't check something.
With subs.
Yep. You didn't check something. You didn't check their license, bond, insurance. You didn't set up the payment schedule right. You didn't manage them correctly. Yeah. People need to stop the blame game and just admit that they didn't do something right.
I will say this, if it's okay for me to talk, it may have been,
please.
People asking, what are y'all doing different during the pandemic? You know, so I had been looking probably 6 months ago or longer about getting where people could go online and fill out and fill everything and do all this stuff, you know, because we don't have all that. We use a QuickBooks Pro. That's our property management stuff we do through there. I told them the only thing we're doing different than this, before they found out the touching stuff didn't spread it, I said we was leaving the front door open and all they had to do was walk in and pay the money. And if I had any of them that didn't want to, you know, come to the office, I'd go collect the money, but I was going to get my money.
Got to get the money.
We just put someone under contract last night in San Jose, and he was asking me like, hey, do you think that we're going to have some trouble renting in the neighborhood? It's like, well, you know, one thing you could do is you could put a little ad on Craigslist or Facebook Marketplace and see how many people apply for it. And in the 12 hours from the time you put it up till the next time we talked, he said, I had to turn it off. I had 52 notifications and people were saying, can I please give you a deposit right now?
Yeah.
And it's just one of those things where the fear in your head was so loud that this person was like, I don't know if I want to buy this house. Like, what if that, what if was very, very loud, and to where he didn't want to take action. And then that one little piece of advice went from, I don't know if I should do this, to, oh my God, we got to get this deal today. Don't let me lose it. I'm going to get like a third more rent than I was even budgeting for. And I've just seen this happen so many times where we let those fears that are unfounded be louder than the facts that would say you should go and do it. And we can all listen to Rick talk about he's been doing this since, what was it, 81? Rick, is that when you got the first one?
Well, I bought my first house to flip in 1976. My wife and I was 21. We sold the mobile home. We bought the house. We fixed it up, lived in it while we was fixing it up. Sold it, turned around. I had a first mortgage and a second mortgage. Second mortgage was almost as high as the first. From a man, I sold it because I didn't have any money. I mean, it was 100% financed, but it was through mortgages. So we did the labor ourselves. We sold it, turned around. I went back to the man. I said, would you be willing to do it again? I said, you paid me the first time. Sure. So I did it. So but all three of these houses, by the third house, we'd went from a little old two-bedroom, one-bath that was built before, right after World War II, to a practically brand-new three-bedroom, two-bath brick house on acre land from 700 square feet to about 2,000. And we moved like, it did all that in 2 years, fixed them up, moving in. And by the third house, I'd paid off the second mortgage of each time, you know, I'd sell it. By the third one, I paid the second mortgage off. Had about $8,000 left over. And I said, you know, there might be something to this. But I assumed a 7.5% VA loan on the third one and assumed FHA loans on the first two. See, people don't realize in the old days, back in the day, all it took to qualify to assume an FHA loan or VA loan was two things. You had to have $45 for a transfer fee. You could have no credit. It was 100% assumable. You had to have $45 for a transfer fee or if they held a mirror under your nose, you were breathing. Those were the two qualifications.
Let's bring those back. We need those days back.
I'm telling you, man, it was good days. Well, you know, even before the recession, you could still borrow, you could buy a piece of property, borrow enough money to fix it up, you know, get in at 100%. I mean, of course, all that changed after 2008.
Part of that's what led to the recession, though, is we were just handing out money to anybody that could fog a mirror, right?
Even earlier, I mean, we used to build houses. You could go to the bank, borrow enough to build a house, buy the land, pay the interest. And you could call your banker and say, look, I'm fixing to start a house. Well, just come by and sign the papers when you get time. You know, it's not like that no more, for sure.
The dream of owning a vacation home can be daunting, from finding the best guests, to the maintenance, to organizing the cleaners after every guest day. With Vacasa, they make that dream into a reality. As a full-service vacation home management company with vacation homes in key destinations across the U.S., they know a thing about how to make owning a vacation home easy and profitable. On top of proactive property maintenance visits by professional local teams, a hospitality-driven booking platform, and around-the-clock support, Vacasa earns homeowners an average of 20% more revenue from their vacation homes. Vacasa is always thinking of ways to simplify the vacation home owning experience by putting your home to work for you. If you're looking to make more from your vacation home, work with the reliable property manager, and finally have peace of mind, partner with Vacasa at vacasa.com/biggerpockets. That's vacasa.com/biggerpockets.
Take a second and imagine this: immediate cash flow, above average rent, built-in equity, and a foolproof exit plan. No, it's not 2012 again. This is just what it's like to invest with Integra Development Group. They've simplified the real estate investing process so everyone can invest. With their new construction single-family rent-to-own homes, you'll get aggressively priced, brand-new properties that have tenants in place now in one of the fastest-growing states in America, Florida. Here's how IDG's rent-to-own strategy works. You get exclusive access to inventory with aggressive pricing thanks to IDG's builder-partner relationships. Then, invest and collect immediate cash flow with tenants already in place at or very close to closing. With the demand for new builds, your tenants pay above market rent, so you rake in more cash flow. And you'll get built-in equity and appreciation with an already agreed-to purchase price at year three, helping the tenants become homeowners while you build wealth. That's investing simplified. So secure your next investment property today with Integra Development Group at IntegraDG.com. That's IntegraDG.com to start investing today. Want to dive deep into commercial real estate, entrepreneurship, leadership, and the economy? Tune into the Walker Webcast, hosted by the CEO of Walker & Dunlop, one of the largest commercial real estate finance and advisory services firms in the nation. As an unparalleled leader in commercial real estate, CEO Willie Walker frequently appears as an expert on major platforms like CNBC and the New York Times. He's even been on the Bigger Pockets podcast network, too. On the Walker Webcast, you'll hear from guests like A-Rod, renowned economist Dr. Peter Linneman, and experts from Walker & Dunlop's capital markets, research, and investment sales groups. So fire up the Walker Webcast on your favorite podcast app or join live on Wednesdays to see Willie interact with his guests. Plus, you can always catch the replay on demand afterward. Stay ahead of the curve with insights for life from the Walker Webcast. Learn more and subscribe to the Walker Webcast at walkerdunlop.com/pockets. And be sure to follow Walker & Dunlop on all your favorite social media channels too. That's walkerdunlop.com/pockets.
So I see that you've moved 31 times. Were these properties that you bought with owner financing, moved in, improved it, and then moved out?
It was a little bit of everything. Like I was just telling you, I had the mobile home and three houses. We would, then when I started building in 84, what I would do, I'd take trades and I'd move in the trade, sell the new house. And see, I've been where I'm at now for almost 6 years, and I lived in the house before that one, 17. So basically, you take all them years out of the picture since 1984, that's a lot of moving. My kids, my wife was a school teacher, so we could keep them in the same school zone. So they'd leave to go into school, and they'd come home at evening, we'd be moved. When she'd pick them up, man, we got good at it, you know. And it's just, you did what you had to do. I mean, you start out with no money, and you because you're trying to buy a rental property. You're trying to borrow money to build, you're trying to borrow money to buy lots. So you got to keep hustling this. But it's worked out pretty good. I don't mean it as a brag, but you know, I tell folks where I live now, There's doctors and lawyers, and we got a football coach. Coach Saban lives three houses up from me, the coach of University of Alabama. I tell my wife, I said, well, like I said, there's doctors and lawyers that live in here and a football coach, and now they got a redneck.
Yeah, I was going to say, how they let you in?
I said, we may not be the only one start out in a mobile home, but I know I'm the only one ever worked on a garbage truck, because that's what I did when I was 16 years old, sitting in Old Port.
Yeah. I love these stories. Brandon's got a similar one. He used to sleep on a couch, all 7'6" of them, hanging over not the quite. Top, you know, while he rented out the rooms that actually had beds to other people. There's just, you see this pattern all the time. The people that are willing to do what others are not end up getting to live the life that other people can't.
I just don't understand when people aren't willing to do what it takes. You know, when you come up poor, you got wants and things, and, you know, and you're just willing to do what you got to do. But I can tell you another little story. We used to move a lot, like I said, and I had been in one house for about 3 years, and we had moved, and I'm on the phone back when your cell phones, you know, plugged in, you know, they were plugged into your car, and you know, it looked like a phone. And I'm on the phone, I pull up in the driveway and I'm talking with somebody, and all of a sudden I said, I don't live here no more. I'd went to my old house. I mean, I'd moved and didn't even, I'd forgotten. No, we're just, you know, that wrapped up in what was going on, moved so much.
I can't say I don't do that all the time. Just the other day I went on to a listing appointment and completely forgot the two folders I was supposed to bring. I had to go back. Shout out there to all the assistants out there who keep guys like us and gals like us on the rails.
Hey, Rick, what do you think the biggest mistakes are landlords make or property managers?
I think not keeping your property up is a big one, because you won't stay competitive in the market. You need to keep your property up. Getting, you know, just not appreciating the tenants. You know, your tenant, you don't have a business without them. I have tenants that been with me. I got one tenant. I bought the house 17 years ago, and she was in it when I bought it. I asked her the other day, I said, how long have you lived here? She said, 21 years.
Wow.
But I've got tenants been me 12, 13, 14. In fact, young man come in, paid his rent for his mom the other day. I didn't know his mama. Said, now, who are you? And he's like 19, and he'd moved in my house when he was 7. Of course, I don't have all the contact every day. You know, I still approve every application, but I don't do that. Now, if somebody comes in and there's nobody at the counter, I definitely take the money. But if my office manager leaves, I say, put it on answered. My number's not out there anywhere, David. I just don't live. You know, I don't talk. You know, I'm at that point in life. I get people, you know, how on Instagram I say, I can help you grow your business. I say, I don't want to grow it. I go back to tell them. I still buy stuff. So sometimes I tell my son, I said, we're not buying any more rentals. And it won't be a day. I said, son, come on, I got a house we're going to go look at.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Even when you don't need them, when you got the knowledge and you like it and you get that hit and you know you're good at what you do, you're going to provide housing. I mean, you're obviously doing a good job if people are staying there for 19 years. It's hard not to keep doing it. I love that point you made. If you're not going to retire at 40, because what it takes to get to where you can retire at 40, you've invested so much. At minimum, you're just going to go do it in another way, whatever's rewarding to you.
Well, the way I look at it, I went in business for myself full-time, 1984. I just turned 29 years old, 1 month. I just had turned 29. So I'm basically, as far as I'm concerned, I've been doing what I wanted to do ever since then. You know, that doesn't mean it's always been easy or whatever, but I had to punch a clock for somebody else for like 10 years. And my son, he's fortunate. He's never had to do that. He's been in this business. He was raised in it, and he's been in it full time since he graduated high school in 2000.
Rick, where do you find deals at today? Where are you finding?
You know, I find a lot of deals on MLS still. Yeah. Because so many times, and David, I'm sure you agree with this, so many real estate agents, I tell anybody, I think it's good to get your real estate license if you want to do this business full-time and buy rental property, but you can never start thinking like a real estate salesperson. You got to always keep thinking like a investor. So a lot of times there's deals out there. They don't have deal across the front of a big sign because, you know, you got to know your market and know what you're looking for. Mm-hmm. But the agents are thinking selling a lot of them. They just want to make that sale. And you got to constantly always think about it as being an investor. So I get a lot of them through there and off market too.
That's your reticular activating system. To the person with the hammer, everything's a nail. The agents have trained their brain to see listing or buyer opportunity. And it's even if it is staring them in the face, they miss it. And that goes for a lot of things in life. When you get used to looking at just one goal that you have, that's a really good point. I like that, that you, even if you're an investor and you become an agent, you got to keep reminding yourself you're still looking for deals for both yourself and your clients.
When I got licensed, that's why I did it. I thought it'd help me find more deals. I sold part-time for a year. Mm-hmm. So I actually quit two jobs in one day when I went full-time. I'd been at the university 10 years, and I had been selling real estate part-time a year and doing my side work also. To this day, I only sleep 6 hours a night. I mean, I was like 4 hours, 6 hours. You get used to it. You can't do it. But I come in and told my wife one day, I'm fixing to do this business full time. So I'm going to build me a house. I'd never built a house before then. And we had two babies. And, you know, she's always been supportive. She's never been involved in my business, but she's always been real supportive. And that meant a lot.
Yeah, that's cool, man. All right. Before we move on to the next segment of the show, I'm curious, what do you need in your business right now? Like, what could help you out? What could have our listeners, what kind of value could they bring you? Is there anything specifically you're looking for?
I just want them to go and follow me on Instagram. You know, I retired from building, like I said, 2015. I turned 60. And that has helped me because it's hard to pull back. You know, you want to keep it. Because, David, you asked earlier, you know, about the fears, and don't take this wrong. But I came up so poor and things were so hard. You know, I got married at 18. You know, we were married 7 years before we had children because I wanted to get a house. We were doing that. Put my wife through college, put my daughter through college. Luckily, my son's like me. He just wanted to get his carpenter certificate and come, you know. So I was always kind of fearless. You know what I mean? I didn't have that. My fear was not the fear of the unknown or the business. Like I said earlier, my fear was the fear of failure. When I was young, I'm a pretty big guy, you know, but when I was young, I come out of high school, I was 6 feet tall, 249 pounds, and construction and all I did. You know, people say, what are you scared of? You know, you say, I ain't scared of nothing. But in reality, I was scared of failure. And I could talk about that now, but back then I couldn't. So that was my go-to thing. I did not want to be a failure. And I became fearless, you know, because I didn't want to be poor.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't mean that any way bad. I mean, I'm just sharing, you know, but the thing that Instagram's helped me before I got on there, I had nobody to share anything with but my son. And when I got to doing that and people, and it's the ego thing too, you know, people like you and they like what you're doing and you, you know, I just want that to grow. I just enjoy it. I tell them I don't do a lot of the DM stuff and all that. And I'm kind of like David there. You can only get back to so many people. But I try to share it through my videos. And I tell them it's not one time in there I'm trying to sell anything. I just, you know, won't help people. But I will tell you this, David. I bought your book because I'm all the time telling folks, because I've been doing, I believe in that Burr method, even when I didn't know what it was called. That's been the hardest thing for me, is learning all these abbreviations. So I bought your book the other day because I've been recommending it. And I'm always telling people to go to Bigger Pockets. But to give you a good example, I mean, I've had to learn this stuff because I say, what does that mean? I had a guy that usually what I try to do when somebody starts following me, I always try to say, thank you for the follow. Well, a lot of times, I guess they think it's automated or something. One guy come back and he said, because he asked me something, I answered, and he said, well, I just didn't know. I thought you was a bot. And I'm thinking, I finally said, buddy, I don't know what you're talking about. And he said, a robot. I mean, I don't, you know. Hell, I'm old school, boy, all this stuff. I mean, that's been the hardest part, like I said.
But it didn't stop you from taking action. I think that's what's so cool about your story, Rick, is you have a mentality like, what do I have to lose? And because of that, you're successful. And I really wanted to highlight it for the people that feel like they have something to lose. Sometimes the fear of I can't take action because what if I lose stops you from what you could go get. And because you said I was poor, I had nothing to lose. I just went and did it. Well, now look at where you got. $10 million real estate with $2 million of debt. I don't think there's anybody here who'd be mad about being in that kind of a position. It's a really good lesson for everyone.
Well, thank you. I tell you something that is kind of the answer to what you said. You know, how we're always talking about what people say to you, like, what if they all get vacant and all that? My answer to people when I was leaving my job, like I said, I'd been there 10 years. I was vested. I took the money out though because I knew I could do more with it in real estate. But they would say, what you going to do if you fail? Well, here's been my philosophy. You get a house, you get a job, and you get a car, you got the same thing everybody else has got. Yeah. And I've had my failures, you know, but you just got to, you know, you either pull the cover over your head or you get up and lace your boots up and get at it.
Wise right words. On. Well, with that, let's head over to the next segment of the show. Our deal. Deal dive. All right, Rick, you've got 100 and some properties or houses now, but we want to dive into one particular deal that you've done and ask you a series of questions about them. So we're going to fire a bunch of questions at you. Number one, what, by the way, do you have a property in mind, something we can dig into?
Yeah, if it's a flip, you know, quit building, we try to flip about 12 houses a year because I still have the office. And if it doesn't generate enough money through the sales of real estate with my agent, and I still have my son's salary, my office manager, my maintenance man. So if we don't generate enough money, it comes out of my rentals. I don't like that.
Yeah, I don't like that either.
Okay. so I got a flip. I did.
I love it. So what kind of property is it? What kind of property type?
This is a single family, which is what I do. And you want me to tell you how I got it?
Nah, we'll ask you.
Okay.
Yeah. So next question is going to be, how did you find that deal?
Okay. I'm glad you asked that. This is a good story. You know, I've got this private money lender I've been doing business with for 20 years. Now, he loves to go to state sales. I love to go to state sales. And I've got a video about this telling people it's a good way to find houses. Something's going on when there's a state sale. Somebody's dying, going to nursing home, whatever. He called me and said, man, I was at a state sale today and they're going to sell the house. I said, well, see what they take for it. And so he negotiates the sale. He buys it for $90,000. So he's going to be the private money lender plus basically he wholesaled it to me. That's another word I didn't know before I got on here. It was the assignment of the contract. So he closed on it. We turned around right back. He closed. He sold me for $95,000. But here's the thing. He says, I'll finance the house. I'll loan you $30,000 to fix it up with. And what he does is you got 2 years, make it happen. I said, that's a deal. So I bought it for $95,000. I put $32,000 in the house. Now, you want me to go ahead and tell everything about it? Or?
Yeah, well, so we got, how much you find it? How much was it? Negotiation,
okay,
we talked a little
about
that.
I bought it for $95,000.
All right.
He loaned me extra $30,000 to fix it up with, so I'm in it for no cash. I end up spending $32,000 with some closing costs and whatever. I got the house finished, like 3 days, I mean, really 2 days, the time we got to sign up, we had multiple offers, of course. I sold it for $189,000. I paid 5% sales commission, which 2% come back to my company because I owned a house in a separate company. So Jarman Realty and Construction made 2% and the other company made 3%. So the commission was like $9,500. I paid $4,700 worth of closing. So when it's all said and done, I mean, it took about 60 days. We got a check at the end. We netted $48,705.
Wow.
On a $95,000 house.
That is not a bad flip.
That was a good deal. I ain't always like that, but, you know, it was a good one.
So to kind of wrap up the deep dive, like what lessons can you pull out of this deal that'll help like listeners? Like what can you teach about this that applies?
I think it's good to have a private money lender lined up. If you're out doing business in case you don't have the cash or whatever, because you got to act fast.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like my house here where I live. I was for 13 years, we had a condo at the beach, me and two other guys in Gulf Shores, Alabama on the beach, and we didn't rent it. Every third week was your week. So anyway, I never spent a full week down there in 13 years. So I'd tell you, I like to work. Few days, I'm ready to come home.
Yep.
Like old David, I tell you, you got to watch that video where I talk about you, Dave. But anyway,
I want to see this video.
I said, that David Green reminds me of me. He likes to work. He likes to get it. But anyway, I'm at the beach and this house where I live, they'd been marking it down. The people had already moved. And anyway, long story short, I tell my wife, if I can get it for X amount of dollars, I'm going to buy it. So we call them and tell them, say, look, we want it, made the offer. And anyway, and I'm out of town, and he's the guy that's my private money lender. I called him and said, you know, would you ride by and look at this? Would you do this deal? He calls him back. He said, look, if you don't want it, I'll give you $50,000 over what you're looking at right now. So you can act on it fast. But when you've got to go in and wait on all the banks and everything, you're going to miss the deal.
Yeah.
So line you up some outside financing.
So I love that tip, Rick, but I want to expand on a little bit here with you and ask you, like, how does somebody, like, you kind of have that mentality of like, just, you know, it's a good deal, I'm just going to go for it. Like, I don't, you don't seem to be stuck in analysis paralysis very long, but a lot of our listeners are. How do you get over just, is that just come with years and years of doing this? Or is that another mental thing to get over? Trying to get perfect?
I never had it because, like I said, I come from the, you know, the working background. So back when I first started, you didn't have home inspectors and whatever. I mean, with my very first house that my wife and I bought at 21, we're not in it 2 weeks. Central heat and air goes out. We're sleeping in the screened-in porch in Alabama in 102 degree heat at night, you know. But you just, but it was a good deal. I knew I could make money on it. So I saved up enough money while I'm doing it to put new central heat and air in it. And we still made money, you know. I think you've got to, I tell people in my videos, if you're looking at a foreclosure, you want to make your offer neat and clean, you know, cut out as many, have an inspection, but don't make all these contingencies, this repair, that repair. A lot of times I get a deal because all I tell you is give me a deed and a title insurance and I take care of everything else. And I tell them I close in 7 days. Well, you know, if you ever bought a foreclosure, you can't even hardly get an answer in 7 days. But it gives them that. So you got to make, it's that least path of resistance, whatever you're doing.
And that's important because you're looking at it from the seller's perspective and you're saying, how easy can I make this for them to just say, okay, fine, you can take it. The minute you jump in and start saying, well, I want this and I want that and I want this too, the natural human response is for them to go do the same thing back. Okay, well, then I want more money and I want this and I want that. And now you get yourself into a complicated mess. And it usually is, it's coming from the place of fear. What if there's some rot on the house? What if one of the pieces of wood is bad? And when those get out of hand, you can easily create a situation for yourself that's not in your best interest, as opposed to, I'm getting a great deal. There's a ton of meat on the bone. Let me make this easy for the seller so that I can close and not make them want to make it more difficult for me too.
Zach, that's what I meant. You said it well. Well, you know, if you live in the South, every house that got any agents had termites. So you can't be scared of that.
Yep.
I mean, they don't just come and stay there and eat the whole house that falls in. They come and they go. It's just, you just got to keep, you know, just the more you learn about construction, houses, and the big thing is financing. I don't care what it is. This business is based on financing. The more you learn about, whether you're a real estate agent, a flipper, or buying rental property, you got to learn financing.
That's why I use that analogy all the time of like, if you have a tool belt and you have a lot of tools in that tool belt, you can take out a lot of projects. But if all you have is one tool, you can't do a whole lot. So like, build up that mental toolbox of, these are the different financing options I have. Here's how hard money works. Here's 9 hard money lenders in my area that I built relationships with. Like that, like having those options gives you so many more options on what you can do with real estate. So yeah, if you're somebody listening to this right now and you like don't have any money whatsoever, it doesn't, like, go out and make those, like, fill your toolbox right now. You don't need money to fill your toolbox. Start building relationships, start getting an idea of who does what, how you can put things together, meeting people. Yeah, that's
I bet your neighbor Nick Saban would agree with that, Rick. He'd tell you, I got different tools I can use in different situations. That's why he's a good coach.
Well, let me tell you this, though. Now, I've lived here almost 6 years. I see him coming and going. Now, his wife has been down here talking to my wife. I tell folks, he doesn't run down here and ask me who to play, and I don't run up there and ask him about real estate. But I will tell you this, when I bought my house, I was remodeling it. And everybody, when they found out I lived, you know, he's 2 houses up, they said, did you ever see him? I said, yeah. He came down here the other day, was talking. I said, look, I don't have time to talk. I got to work. And they said, really? I said, no. Because I mean, this is an Alabama, this is a football town right here now.
Yeah.
But I like to see them win. It helps my property values. You know, just keep winning, you know, because I'm not into all that.
They're going to work that into Bigger Pockets Insights. Who's expected to be the top college football team and how will that help property values? Everyone's looking at the high school draft class to figure out where they should go invest next.
There you go.
That's why I tell them, I don't care if Auburn wins the state championship, Alabama's good for Alabama. Because I'm into music like you, Brandon. I was a musician all them years. In fact, I played 6 nights a week my senior year in high school at Amada Inn. I was in my wife's brother's band. That's how I met her.
That's awesome. What'd you play?
I play guitar, but I went to bluegrass in 1974, and all I've did is acoustical since then. I play the dobro resophonic guitar.
Ah, it's awesome. Well, we need more videos of that on your Instagram. That's what I think we need.
Okay.
But before we get there, before people go check out your Instagram, I think it's time to slowly wrap this show up by heading to our
Famous Four.
All right, but before we get to the Famous Four, let's hear something else you should be listening to as soon as this episode ends.
Hey guys, it's Felipe from the Real Estate Rookie Show. Last week, we had Ruben on the show, who's got a full-time job, 5 rental properties, and has figured out how to automate all of it. He also talks about how he took over someone's loan that was in pre-foreclosure, got them money, made himself equity, and is now living in the property and is using his rental income to buy his forever home. What a great show. Make sure you go back and listen.
All right, so make sure you check out the episode. And now it's time for our Famous Four. I did it twice. See that? You like it? Guest, Mr. Rick Jarman. Are you ready for the Famous Four? Can you handle this?
I think so. I hope so.
All right. Number one, current favorite real estate related book.
Current favorite real estate related book. You know, it'd probably be the Burr Method, even though I hadn't read it yet.
You recommend it enough.
The reviews alone were enough to make you call it your favorite book without reading.
Yeah, well, you know, I hadn't read a lot. Like I said, about last year or something, I've been working on some YouTube and Instagram, learning all this stuff. In fact, somebody asked me, what's my favorite? I got to look in one of my books. Was, you know, Robert Kiyosaki and Donald Trump wrote a book together. And I got to look at that was 13 years ago. So yeah. I read a lot, but I just don't read a lot of real estate. But it would probably be the Burr Method. I hadn't read it yet, but I know it's going to be good.
That's how you know you wrote a good book.
That's right.
Well, it's because it has a good title, and Brandon came up with the title, so that doesn't tell you guys something about marketing.
Brandon, I'm going to buy your books too now, buddy.
Oh, you better.
You got to buy one of his coffee mugs. Get one of those squawk like a bird.
Squawk like a bird.
There you go. All the profits go to the Hawaii Humane Society. Is that right, Brandon?
That is true. They do. BiggerPockets.com/shirt. It should be /mug, but it is /shirt, and you can buy yourself a shirt or a mug with Stuart the bird on it.
All right. Anyway. And there's a very funny video on Brandon's Instagram of him trying to make a video and Stuart flying in the middle of it, coming home and just like hanging all over his shirt. I was laughing out loud. You know, this is an LOL mean laugh out loud.
It does, so but
now,
you never do.
Now you got to say LOL, like literally laughing out loud because we just put LOL for nothing.
Don't get me going on abbreviations.
All right. So do you have a favorite business book, Rick?
You know, I do. This is when, like I told you, I went through some hard times in the late 90s. You know, I went from being able to borrow millions of dollars to where I couldn't get a $1,999 pager financed. So it was tough. And I read a book. It's by Trammell Crow, Master Builder. I don't know if you're familiar like with the Lincoln properties and Trammell Crow properties and all these things. In fact, I recommend this book on the first podcast I was ever on. The guy went and said, man, that book's $80 because, you know, it come a lot, but it's like a textbook almost. But what he does, he had all these different partners that none of them were related. He was like a spider in the center, and it's like a spider web. And like, maybe I'm doing something with Brandon, I'm doing something with David, and they have nothing to do with each other, you know. And so I started that because I had accountants and lawyers and even private people that knew I knew how to make money and what to do. So I'd do business when we set up companies. And that's how I came back, you know, because I could take my money I was making and buy rentals. And half of something's better than nothing, you know. They would put up the money. I'd be the talent. And it reached a point, a couple of them said, man, you don't need us no more. I guess we're not going to do business. Said, no, man, you were there when I needed you. I keep doing it. In fact, one of my buddies who's an appraiser, he and I have been doing stuff together since 1987. You know, I built his office. I did a video about it and stuff. But today, the only partners I have are my son and my accountant, who's also my nephew. He and I own 4 houses together. But working with partners, I did a couple videos how I did that, and it's good. That book helped me lay out some groundwork.
Very cool. I had not heard of that one.
So we know you love to work, which is awesome because I do too. So when you love working, it doesn't feel like work. Right. But what about hobbies other than playing bluegrass guitar and hanging out with Nick Saban teaching about football?
Yeah. Well, I tell you, I did a video, as I'm always telling you. I told folks, it says, people ask them what I do for fun. Well, I played music. I don't hunt fish, I tell them, but I do hunt them George Washington. So that's okay. That's about the only hunting I do, you know. It's, I don't know what else to tell you. I mean, I'd love to do family things. I love to travel. You know, of course, I told my wife, I said, here we're in a position, we're ready to really start traveling, because that was one reason we sold our condos, where we could travel, and it was like 3 years ago. And then, you know, got grandkids always doing stuff. We couldn't get down there because of grandkids. Because I got 4 grandkids, 15, 10, 5, and less than 2 years old. So I want to travel. Now we're in the pandemic. And all we can do is travel. Just, you know, stuck here at the house.
Yep.
But hunting George Washington, that's a good hobby.
That is a hobby. All right, number 4. Rick, what do you think sets apart successful real estate investors from all those who fail, or they never get started, or they just give up?
No quit mentality. You know, you just can't quit. You just don't give up. You know, it's like those saying, you might lose the battle, but you got to win the war.
Yeah.
So yeah, because as long as you're learning from your losses, then they're not really losses. You're getting one step closer to winning.
I will tell you this, Kevin, you know, sent that little list of stuff to fill out. Here's how old school I am. My office manager was going out of town, and our scanner was messed up. She's going on vacation, and he sent me the list. I'm thinking, I'm just going to have to handwrite it, and I have my wife to write it, because I tell folks, I can't spell, but I can add like hell. So I had her to write it out for me, and I took pictures of it and sent it to Kevin. But one of the examples or something I was afraid y'all was going to ask is, where do you see your career in 10 years? I'm thinking, well, I'll be 75 years old. I don't know where it'll be. Hope I'm doing what I'm doing now.
There you go.
All right. Well, last question of the day. People want to know more. Where's your preferred place for them to find out more about you?
Instagram, Real Estate Old School. Just come and follow me. I try to throw out a video, like I said, 4, 5, 5, 6 a week. And I don't do any mentoring. I just try to share it through my videos.
There you go.
And I don't want nothing from anybody, just to come follow. I ain't trying to. I tell folks now, when I write me a book, I'm going to try to sell it now. I'll be like, you big timers then.
Rick, if you write a book, I will buy your book, and I will tell absolutely everyone else to buy it. It's actually my favorite real estate book, guys. Rick's new book is actually my favorite book of all time. I haven't read it yet.
I can tell you right now, it's my favorite real estate book.
I'm going to say, every time from now on somebody asks me my favorite book, I'm going to say Rick's new book.
Oh, Rick, you're going to need to give us a name pretty soon. Is it going to be called Real Estate Old School?
Yeah, I think so.
Now you have to write one.
Like maybe after you buy your first piece of property, you know. Yep. With things, I want it to be really prepare you for it.
I love it.
Right on.
Do it, man. Well, with that said, we're going to get out of here. By the way, Rick, and for anybody else who cares, I once wrote a podcast for a guest podcast for somebody else on how to write a book in 100 days. We'll put a link to it in the show notes at biggerpockets.com/show393. If you want to learn my tips for writing a book, anybody listening who wants to write a book, you can learn kind of what's worked well for me.
I came to Brandon when I was going to write my first book, Long Distance Real Estate Investing, and you gave me incredibly good advice. It was very, very helpful.
Well, that letter I sent, the first one or the second one, it got lost when I was filling out all that. I told her, I said, now, Brandon, I got an idea for a book, man. I'd like to talk with you.
There we go. Now I'm going to send you a podcast and you're going to go listen to it.
Like, I know what a podcast is. To an analogy, Brandon can turn anything into a book. Brandon, I mean, I'm still waiting for you to get into the competitive eating space and blow Joey Chestnut away you can eat, and then write a book on how to eat fast. Fastest eater in the world.
Well, I want to say this, guys, like this for me, it's been like being on the Jimmy Fallon show or whatever, because this, I'm still a goal setter. And, you know, like I told y'all, the reason I'm doing what I'm doing, the Bigger Pockets is, and thank you for making my goal come true of being able to be on here. I have really enjoyed it. And I tell you, I recommend y'all to everybody all the time.
It's awesome, well, man.
Thank you. It was great meeting you today, Rick.
It was great.
I've enjoyed it.
All right. Thanks, dude. All right. And that was our show with Rick Jarman. I guess, David, you want to take us out?
Yeah. This was a great time, guys. Make sure you go check out Rick's Instagram page, Real Estate Old School. He is Beardy Brandon. You can watch Stuart the Lovebird climbing all over him. I am David Green 24. Also, if somebody can find that video Rick's talking about, tag me in it so I can watch. Apparently, he's got a video to me, which is very cool. You're the first person. Rick, you're the closest thing I got to a groupie out there, man. Don't ever change. I need guys like you in my life. This is David Green for Brandon, Best Book I Never Read Turner, signing off.
You're listening to Bigger Pockets Radio, simplifying real estate for investors large and small. If you're here looking to learn about real estate investing without all the hype, you're in the right place. Be sure to join the millions of others who have benefited from BiggerPockets.com, your home for real estate investing online.
The market is changing and finding your way can be tricky. Rates shift, headlines whirl, but your goal hasn't changed. You want financial freedom. And the best investors know it's not about timing the market, it's about time in the market. If you're ready to get into the real estate investing game or take your game to the next level, finding an investor-friendly agent is your next step. With BiggerPockets Agent Finder, you can find the right agent in minutes. Just head to biggerpockets.com/deals and enter a few details about what and where you want to buy, and bam! Instantly match with an investor-friendly agent who fits the bill. These local market experts can help you navigate the neighborhoods, analyze the numbers, and take action with confidence once and for all. This free resource is only available at biggerpockets.com/deals. Get an agent, get the deal, and get closer to financial freedom at biggerpockets.com/deals. That's biggerpockets.com/deals to find your investor-friendly agent today.
The content of this podcast is for informational purposes only. Past performance is not indicative of future results, and all hosts and participant opinions are their own.
Investment in any asset, real estate included, involves risk. Use your best judgment and consult with qualified advisors before investing. Only risk capital you can afford to lose.
Bigger Pockets LLC disclaims all liability for direct, indirect, consequential, or other damages arising from reliance upon information presented in this podcast.